Okay. Let's start. Let's start. Okay.
Yehuda, it's hard to read. Yehuda Lo or Lei Ben Bitzalo is the Maharal. It's Moreno Harav Loi or Lo. That's how you get the Maharal. Okay. 1512, more or less, till 1609. So he lived a long, long time. Okay. Now, the Maharal is different than anybody else we've done so far. If you do, you know, Rashi, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Tor, the Rush, the Mechaber, the Ramah. So they exist in, like, you know, these are their Talmidim, these are their Rabbeim, this is the input that they had, this is the continuation of what they had. Okay? The Maharal's not like that at all. He stands on his own in the history of Rishonim and Achronim. He's not a continuation of Rishonim. He doesn't really begin a movement, which is something that we'll see most people that we do. He's just a towering personality, and he's an original thinker, and he has deep ideas, and that's why he matters in the history of Rishonim and Achronim, for no other reason. He may have, I'll come back to this later, he may have been the forerunner of a movement that starts later. All right, we'll come back to that. More on that later. Okay, who's the Maharal? He comes from a kind of a noble family of Talmidei Chachamim. They are revered for their piety, for their asceticism, for their tzidkus. Okay, this is generally the, you know, Jews and non-Jews alike. They all respect and revere the family of the Maharal. It's not at all clear that the Maharal went to yeshiva at all. Like, I've done a bunch of research just to look around. You can't really find who his Rebbeim are. Which makes me think, and other people think this also, that he's an autodidact. Which means?
Self-taught.
Huh?
Self-taught.
Excellent. Which means he's self-taught. Now, the thing about being self-taught, and I could be wrong about this, the thing about being self-taught is that you're much more likely to be an original thinker. So you have Rebbeim, so you accept what the Rebbeim say. But if you're self-taught, who knows where it could go? Okay, and he did become an original thinker, and we'll deal with that. But first, let's do a little history. Hey, Martin Luther starts Protestantism in 1523. Now, first, Martin Luther is very supportive of Jews. And he's supportive of Shabbos, he's supportive of all these things. Presumably, because he thinks that a bunch of Jews will join his movement against the church and become Protestants. But the opposite happens, which is a bunch of Goyim become Jews because he's so positive about Judaism. So that doesn't work for Martin Luther. So he doubles down on his hatred for Judaism. In his subtly titled work, The Jews and Their Lies. Okay, like, that's where he just becomes a real anti-Semite. And he basically says, you know, you have to wipe out the Jews. Okay, in 1542, the Turks attack Central Europe, which begins years and years, decades of wars. Jews are expelled from Bohemia, including from Prague, which is a really big deal because Prague was the place where Jews lived for a long time. In 1564, King Ferdinand, who was a big anti-Semite, dies, and his son, Maximilian II, takes over. He's a good guy. This guy, Maximilian II, is a good guy.
Is he from?
Huh? Not as from as me. He was probably from. Okay? And he basically revokes all expulsion orders, thus beginning the golden age of Prague, in which he leaves Jews alone. He was liberal, and he actually visited the Jewish ghetto. Prague has a Jewish ghetto, and the Maharal lived there, and Maximilian II visited, which was a sign of, like, a huge, huge respect. Because if you visit the shuls, you know, you're saying that you respect it. Yes?
So the Turks attacked who, and then who was in
charge? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
So who's in charge? Where's Maximilian from?
He's from Prussia.
Oh, Prussia took over Prague?
Yeah.
Okay.
Last thing, the Maharal is extremely well educated in all areas of Torah, and mostly, well, not mostly, all areas of Torah, but also in secular knowledge. And this will make a difference also. Okay, the Maharal is interested in being smart. He's interested in being a Talmid Chacham. He's less interested in being a rabbi and influencing people. As a result, the Maharal doesn't get married till he's 32. That's really late at a time when people are getting married at 18 and 17 and 16. Interestingly, the Maharal at 32 marries somebody who's 28. So I'm guessing here, but she also must have been similar in that, you know, she wanted to do things and she wanted to be educated. Don't worry, they're married for 66 years. So he makes up for lost time. And they have 6 children, 5 girls and a boy, all of whom married important people and became important people, blah, blah, blah. Okay, the Maharal sits and learns till he's 39. So I mean, he doesn't write anything, he doesn't have any influence, he just sits and learns till he's 39. Now, he clearly develops a reputation of being a really smart guy and a big Talmid Chacham because his first job is a big job. But the point to see is that the Maharal is the type of person who's interested in the world of ideas. As a result of which, you know, he sits by himself, not in the yeshiva, and learns till he's 39. When he is offered to be the rabbi of Nicholsburg. Okay, to you and me, Nicholsburg doesn't sound like a big thing. But in Moravia, Nicholsburg was a big deal. Okay, it was the biggest town in Moravia. And it introduced the Maharal as its leader. The problem is, it was a hard place to be a rabbi. And it was a hard place to live because people fought a lot. Okay, there were 2 big things that come out of the Maharal's time in Nicholsburg. The first is that apparently people drank Yain Nesach. Now, it doesn't mean real Yain Nesach. It means more or less Stam Yainam, where they had their workers carry kosher wines in a way that we wouldn't. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is, much like many communities that we live in, there was a big problem with speaking in shul during davening. Okay? Now, the Maharal thought he could deal with both of these. But it wasn't so simple. Because in a community in which, you know, the town council, let's say, who hire and fire the rabbi are a bunch of rich guys, nothing changes. So, you know, it's a problem to tell them you can't drink Yain Nesach anymore. Because they tell you, well, that was true in other places, but the reason for the Gezerah is because we might intermarry. We're not going to intermarry, don't worry. So the Maharal thought about that. The Maharal thought about talking in shul, where these people said, that's our minhag, with a straight face. You know, we've been talking in shul for generations, and we're going to continue talking in shul. Okay? The Maharal made up mishabeachs for people who don't drink Yain Nesach and for people who don't talk in shul. The mishabeach for people who don't talk in shul still exists. There are places in Yerushalayim where they say it's cool. You know, and it's nice because you feel if you don't talk in shul, then you feel like it's a mishabeach for you. Right? Okay, so that's what happens here. He stays in Nicholsburg for 19 years. But they're hard years because there's a lot of fighting. There's a lot of dissension. So then he moves to Prague. Now, here's the important thing. He doesn't move to Prague as the chief rabbi. He just wants to get out of Nicholsburg. And so he moves with his family to Prague. And this is where, really, he's 60 years old when his intellectual life starts. And we'll start with the following. The Maharal had a real philosophy of education. He would have hated our yeshiva. Let's just be clear. He would have hated any yeshiva. The Maharal says, there's the Mishnah in Avos that tells us this is how you should educate your children. What does the Mishnah say? Huh? Ben Chamesh l'mikra, Ben Eser l'mishnah, Ben Chamesh esrei l'gemara, Okay, Ben Shmona Esrei L'Chupa, The Maharal believed in that deeply. He thought that for an 8 or 9 year old to teach them Gemara, not just like Tosfos, just Gemara, is a complete waste of time. Because it doesn't work, it doesn't make sense. And you're chasing details, and you know, you go to a shir, and there's a whole pill pull, and what does it mean to anybody? The thing is, it did mean things to people, because people were embarrassed to not learn Gemara. So the Maharal started his own yeshiva in Prague. He showed up, he saw the situation, and he started his own yeshiva that was text-based, and that learned Mishnah. Okay, till you got to a certain point. But it learned Mikra, and it learned Mikra well, and then it learned Mishnah, and then if you were good at that, you know, you could learn Gemara. Okay? Constant Chazara. You didn't just learn a Mishnah and move on. You reviewed it, because the Maharal thought that there was tons of stuff in the Mishnah that didn't exist in the Gemara. The way he saw it, you could see Gemara in Mishnayos, and you could see Psak Halacha in Gemara, if you learn it properly, and if you learn it well. Okay? He was not at all a big fan of learning Rambam or learning Shulchan Aruch. Okay? His brother was a bigger opponent. He didn't make a big deal out of it, but he thought that's not real knowledge. That's just, you know, somebody's telling you what the Psak Halacha is. But if you really want to understand what's going on, you have to learn Mishnah in depth, and following that, you have to learn Gemara in depth. Okay? Again, here, there were opponents. Because, you know, you're 13, you're getting bar mitzvah, you haven't learned Gemara yet. You know, it was hard to do that. And I think the Maharal knew it was hard. He tried hard to get people to do it, but it wasn't 1,000% successful. Okay, what was successful at the time was he started Chevra Mishnayos. He thought that to just learn Mishnayos by yourself is hard. In fact, it's boring. But if you do it in a group and you try to learn it in depth, there's something there. So Chevra Mishnayos, to give you a sense, in Prague, every shul had a Chevra Mishnayos. And on top of that, Rav Yom Tov Lipman Heller, who was known as the Tosfos Yom Tov, who was the Maharal's Talmud, he wrote a Tosfos, essentially, on Mishnayos. It's another way to learn Mishnah and to be able to get a sense for what's going on in the Gemara before you even open a Gemara. You know, most people don't learn Tosfos Yom Tov anymore. But if you did, you get a real leg up on learning Gemara before you even open the Gemara, because you would have the major sugyas already dealt with in the Tosfos Yom Tov. Okay, that's the basic educational philosophy. Now let's turn to something that really matters, and that is the unique nature of the Jewish people. Here the Ramban had a very, very strong view. Not since the Kuzari was someone so clear as the Maharal about how the Jewish people are different than Gentiles. Okay? God created Jewish people differently than Gentiles, and therefore we are unique. Okay? This is a good parsha to talk about it because he has a lot to say on Abraham. Who was Abraham Avinu? So let's start as follows. Noach has an introduction in the Torah. Right? Eila told us, Noach ish tzadik tamim ayah v'dor tav. There's two types of chazals there, right? Yesh doshim l'shvach, yesh doshim l'gnai. But it's there. He was a tzaddik tamim b'dorotav. What's our introduction to Avram Avinu? Anybody? Huh? Yeah, but it just says Lech Lecha Me'atz Menot El Arz Shereka. It's great. What do we have in last week's parasha? Terach Avi Avram, right? You have the genealogy. Where's the me? Right? Where's the Ur Kasdim? Where's all of that? So it's not there. Okay? And all Rishonim discuss, what does the Maharal say? The Maharal says incredibly, Avraham Avinu was chosen for no reason. God needed a chosen people, so he picked the Jews for no reason at all. But once he picked the Jews, so Avraham Avinu was going to be the forefather of the Jews. And because it's for no reason, he says, we can never be rejected by God. Because he picked us for no reason, so we can't disappoint him. The world has to have Jews, and Jews have to be the chosen people. Okay? That's a staggeringly original idea. The world can't exist without Jews being chosen by God. Now, just as an aside, but it's a good story, because it's the first sikha that I ever understood in this yeshiva. Okay? 100 years ago, on Shabbos Parshas Lech Lecha, Avram Oren, doesn't matter, that's his name, okay, who's now my neighbor, he gave a Dvar Torah at lunch, in which he quoted this Maharal, and said, you know, Avram Avinu wasn't chosen for any reason, etc., etc. At Shalosh Shudas, Rav Lichtenstein got up, and this is the first one that I understood. So it's this week. If you haven't understood till now, you can try again now. And he said, you know, Avraham Oren is a great guy. He's lovely. And he praised him. And he said, the idea is insane. The idea that God chose Avraham Avinu for no reason other than because he was Avraham Avinu is insane. And he said, it frustrates me and it bothers me so much. I didn't look up the Maharal because I was afraid that the Maharal actually says it. Which the Maharal actually does. So Rav Aaron said, if you think that the Mishnah in Avos that says Gadol Ha'ava She'ena Tluya B'davar Me'ava Tluya B'davar, right? Because an Ava She'ena Tluya B'davar has no Davar to be Batel. But an Ava Tluya B'davar Batla Davar Batla Ava. So if you fall in love with somebody because she's beautiful, when she loses her beauty, you'll lose your love. Okay? So Lindsay said, if that's true about Avraham, and that makes Avraham, you know, greater, the love of God for Avraham greater because there's no thing, he said, here's what we should do. We should all get on the bus after Shabbos and go to Yerushalayim and find Pushtakiyot who are sitting on the Barzilim and marry them. Because there'd be no reason to marry them. We'll just marry people for no reason. And then the Maharal will be right. We won't be able to divorce them because they'll be chosen by us for no reason. He said, that can't be. You marry people for a reason. He was being cynical, obviously. You marry people for a reason. The Rambam, the Maharal says the same thing about Maimon Har Sinai. That Kaf Aleim Har Kigigis, it was Ki'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Ma'anes Klal Yisrael, and in which case the punishment is Lo Yuchal Shalcha Kol Yamav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced us to accept the Torah, therefore preventing the possibility that we wouldn't be the chosen people, therefore forcing us into this role. Okay, I happen to have heard that vart for the first time at my Sheva Brachos. Yeah, you don't want to say a vart like that at your Sheva Brachos. Okay, my wife said to me, is your whole family insane? Like, your uncle would get up and Ki'ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Ma'anes Klal Yisrael, Mazel Tov. Okay, fine. That's what happened. Anyway, so that's the Maharal's first idea, that we're completely unique. Now we move on to Agada, which is one of the Maharal's specialties. He thought it was critical to learn Agada deeply, but deeply doesn't mean literally. He thought if you learned Agadata literally, you were insulting Agadata, because it clearly is not supposed to be understood literally. So, for example, the Agada says, the Medrash says that Vashti had a tail. So the Maharal said, yeah. What it means is that Vashti was operating on animal instincts. That's what the tail means. It doesn't mean she literally had a tail. But he said the Medrash is really, really important because it gives you insights, but the insights are not literal. If you understand the Medrash literally, you're insulting the Medrash. That's not how it works. Okay? The Maharal talked about essential reality versus physical reality. Essential reality is the real thing. Physical reality is how Chazal portray it in the Medrash. Okay? So again, if you go back to the Vashti thing, Chazal talk about her growing a tail. It doesn't mean that, so he'll say, it doesn't mean that she grew a tail. It means that she started acting as an animal. Okay? So you have the physical reality versus the real reality. At the same time, or maybe because of this, the Maharal was a huge fan of Chazal. Okay, he was a huge fan of Chazal in the following sense. Everybody agrees that Chazal determined halacha. Okay, that's their job. But for the Maharal, it's true that they determine halacha, but it's even more true that they determine hashkafa. It's hard to, you know, it's a hard thing to decide this is what Chazal think. This is the view of Chazal. But the Maharal thought, and most of his Sfarim are about this, the Maharal thought if Chazal wrote on something, they have insights. And their insights are worth focusing on. Okay? So, for example, Be'er HaGola, one of his earlier works, is the response to somebody named Azariah ben Derasi, who wrote Ma'or Enayim. Azariah Derasi was a Shomer Mitzvos, but he thought that Chazal's limited to halacha. They don't have anything to say about anything else. And he attacks many, many statements of Chazal because they're not halachic statements. Okay? The Maharal shows up and says it's not true. It doesn't work that way. Chazal determined halacha. Chazal also determined hashkafa. They determine who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is who he is. But I'm saying their view of things matters to us, and that we should give them more credit than we do. In the Be'er HaGa'ola, he says as follows. If you comprehend the words that have been explained here, and you understand for yourself that not everything can be written down, your heart will marvel at this sight, how they interpreted scripture in such great depth, and did so with truth and extreme precision. Similarly, with all the words of Drash found in the Talmud and all the rest of the Midrashim there, there is not one of them, great or small, whose words lack the depth of Scripture in accord with its true meaning. He says, Midrashim give you insight into Torah Shebichtav, and they teach you things that you wouldn't have otherwise. For this is why it's called Drasha, because it is a process of demanding with extremely insistent interrogation until the deep level of Scripture is reached. So when the Maharal comes across a difficult medrash, he doesn't discount it. He works really, really hard to try to understand how Chazal could have thought that that's what happened in the Pesukim. Okay? Till he finds an explanation. Who does this make the Maharal a forerunner of? Anybody want to guess? The answer is Chassidus. The Maharal talked about, we'll do it this way. Rav Huttner once said this. The Maharal talked Nistar Belashon Nigla, meaning he had Kabbalistic ideas, but he spoke about them in philosophic terms. So most of us think to ourselves, all right, it's some vague thing, I'm not really getting it. But the people who love the Maharal said, no, it's not like that at all. He's just using different language. He's explaining deep ideas with basic philosophy, which is essentially what happened with Chassidus a few hundred years later. So it's not fair to say that the Maharal, led to Chassidus. But it's fair to say that the Maharal's ideas, the idea of speaking about Nistar, speaking about Kabbalah, in the language of philosophy, that carried the day. He wrote mystical Kabbalistic ideas in regular words. He was immersed in Kabbalah, but didn't use that language. His Talmidim, Rav Dessler, Rav Cook, Rav Huttner, right? Rav Huttner started the yeshiva called, the real name of the yeshiva is Gur Aryeh, right? That's named for the Maharal. All these people were influenced by his writings. Now, there's no question then that it's his writings, though I said at the beginning that it doesn't really matter, meaning that his writings stand on their own. It's true, but I think as we go through time and when we get to Chassidus, you'll see that the idea of talking about Kabbalah in non-Kabbalistic language is what set the stage for Chassidus. Okay, let's stop here. One